Hey, Chris Manning here from the Locked On Cavs podcast with my co-host Evan Damrell. Today's show is continuing our look at different players and whether we are hot or cold on them. Today, those players are Isaac Okoro, Caris LeVert, and Lamar Stevens. Let's get into it.
Cavs need a three. Sexton works on Irving, trying to get loose. He'll fire. Bang! Knocks it down. Ground. Here goes Okoro to the bucket. And oh my, Okoro throws it down. 10 seconds to go. Here comes Colin Sexton. Sexton chased by Hill. Off to Stevens. Oh my. 45 ticks to go. That shot is blocked by Nance.
Get that big stuff out of here.
Prince knocks down that Harden pass. Garland's there. Garland upstairs for Allen. Oh, look out.
There you go. That's called team ball right there.
All right, we're here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning, covering the Cavs primarily for Diamond Uproxx and Fear the Sword. That's Evan Damrell. Primarily covers the Cavs for Facebook's Right Down Euclid, as well as the whole Cleveland Sports Center over there. And he also does stuff at Fear the Sword. Evan, let's continue our hot or cold series, because that's what we're doing today.
Hot
and I think
cold.
It should be fun.
We're yes and we're no. We're in and we're out. What a banger of a song.
Evan, before we dive into our first player, which is as a core, I need to ask you something. Have you seen the movie Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah, I thought you were going to ask me if I heard the polka cover of Hot and Cold, which
no.
I love. It's from like some Kazakh band. It rules. Yeah, I have. It's a good movie. Or it's an enjoyable experience. I'd say it's a good movie.
No, that's a good movie. That's just straight up a banger. Banger.
Okay, yeah, for what the type of film it is, it's a great movie, but I'm just like thinking like in terms of like the echelons of film, it's not like, oh man, you know what I need to recommend to everybody.
Not,
I see.
I mean, it's not like in the top 100 of all time, but it's
not going to be like, hey, have you seen Coda? Like that's the hot topic around the fam jam lately. It's because my parents watched it because they got a free month of Apple TV, and they're like, have you seen Coda? I'm like, yes, I think everyone has.
It's going to be me talking about The Northman in like 2 weeks.
Bro, I want to see it with you because my SO doesn't like that type of stuff.
You know who was also not seeing that movie? Leanne Manning. Absolutely not seeing the
Mrs. Manning. If your students are listening right now, tell her I hope you have a good day.
She's not going to see The Northman, but I'm going to see The Northman. It's going to be great. All right. First player up, Isaac Okoro. Evan, I want to center this conversation around his three-point shooting. Because I pulled some numbers for this episode when I was prepping our outlines. And
surprise.
These numbers kind of like these numbers caught me off guard a little bit, and they sort of match like what we've seen, I think, from how he's played of late to some degree. But here, I just want to lay these out because they're kind of crazy. For the year, Okoro is at 35% from three, 36% on corner three-pointers, overwhelmingly large amount of catch-and-shoot threes instead of pull-up threes. Since March 8th, which is the date of the first game after Jared Allen went out, Okoro is 55% at three-pointers overall. He is 58% from the corner. Now,
Dave Zabek, eat your heart out.
This is still only accounts for 27% of his shot attempts.
Love you,
Dave. Shot attempts have declined a little bit, at least from three. And we'll get to this also later with Lamar Stevens, which is kind of like an interesting problem to some degree with two guys you're playing a lot of minutes playing on the wings. But I came into this. I still am probably sort of actually a little more cold on Okoro than I might have been like 6 months ago. I think the lack of development with the ball in his hands, which is somewhat of a structural thing, the lack of kind of feeling like his offense has progressed in a real way, I think is a problem. I think it is telling that like he spent so much time in the corner because that's like where they feel like they can maximize whatever spacing he provides. I still think the defense is obviously very good. I think like if this stretch of shooting is an indication of like maybe a real bump is going to come and he's going to hit above average next year, that's a really, really encouraging thing. So let's see where that goes. But I think I'm actually warmer than I thought I would be coming in, even though I'm still probably a little bit toeing the middle line a little bit right now on him.
See, I'm really surprised you're saying you're colder than you were 6 months ago on him, because like you're like the biggest fan of what Isaac Okoro is as a player.
I don't know if the piece went up, so I don't want to like say if it's up or not, but I was talking to someone at a game recently and we were talking about Okoro for a little bit because I'm me and I asked this person.
I know who you're talking about. I don't think it's up yet.
I don't think it is. I've been checking so we could tweet it and I could read it. And we were talking about NBA offense and we were talking about cutting and spacing and things around Darius and sort of the things that have happened with Cleveland this year. And that made me I think when you get outside of your little Cavs bubble and you talk to someone who's maybe like not seeing some of the stuff and appreciate some of the stuff, like I think there is benefit to that of like challenging your viewpoint a little bit. And I think that's what fair. That did to me. And I still think this is a guy you can like win with, right? Like I think as you go forward, I think this is like a rotation NBA player. I think this is like a good solid NBA player.
And
I think it is just I'm a little less sure that like the offensive leap you might like to come is coming. I'm curious to see like what he ends up settling in. And, like next year, what his offense looks like will be a top It's a top 3 to 5 Cavs storyline next year to me.
Well, it's also how the Cavs utilize him next season as well. Like Colin Sexton does kind of change the calculus a little bit. Like, do you want to stick to a smaller backcourt or do you want Sexton to come off the bench and be your sixth man? And then you have Okoro be the starting point of attack defender next to Garland. Like, I think Okoro really thrives in that role. And I think the numbers do speak to how maybe he's becoming more comfortable as a player. But like you said, I think his baseline has always been a solid rotation player who is defensive first, provides you like a little bit of funky tertiary playmaking, provides you with some shooting, some scoring, some slashing, different ways to kind of score the ball. But in the grand scheme of Cleveland's offensive dichotomy, if they're fully healthy next season, I use this word a lot, I know, but Darius Garland, Evan Mobley, Jared Allen, those are your three main shot takers and shot makers. Then you have Colin Sexton, whether he starts or comes off the bench. You have Lauri Markkanen, who needs shots if he's still here. You have Caris LeVert, who needs shots if he's still here. There's only so many shots to go around. If you're asking Isaac Okoro to give you column A, which is solid point of attack defense and matching the team's best perimeter player, and then it's column B, hey, we need shooting and scoring, you want more of A and maybe a little bit less of B at that point. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, let me ask you this as a follow-up, and I think this is probably important for thinking about all the guys we talked about on the previous episode and on today. How much do you feel like what we're seeing now, where like we're learning and seeing guys in these contexts where things have broken down and things are not in their optimal way that Cleveland constructed, because things are never optimal, right? Like things always break down.
You're asking the most of these players right now.
Right, you're asking like the extreme amount to them to succeed in these uncomfortable circumstances.
You're asking Moses Brown to play 30 minutes a night.
Yeah, you're asking Lauri Markkanen to play the five and be like a big at times, and that's like really hard to do. You're asking Okoro and Lamar Stevens to space the floor, and like that's at pushing them to their extreme
of
what they can do. So do you feel like Man City's probably win the Premier League title? Bill's going to be okay. If you think about what we've learned about them in that context, does that like make you like, do you weigh that any differently than maybe what you would have learned in optimal circumstances with those players?
Yes.
I tend to put some more weight into it, seeing it like what they're in terms of like their upside, in terms of like, okay, you're out of your perfect structure right now. How do you respond to that? And some of that's coaching, but...
Yeah, I agree with you in that case where you're really getting a full idea of where they're at and maybe where they need to go. But when it comes to Isaac Okoro, this is only his second year in the league. You've had to really hone in on year three to see, like, is he going to take the leap, these leaps offensively, or is he just going to be kind of average as just a player overall, like, offensively, but, like, defensively could be an elite player. That's the thing. And I always go back to the fact that it's not like Scotty Barnes coming out of Florida State. It's not like any player with a broken jump shot. Like Okoro's mechanics aren't broken. They need tuned a little bit. And I think he's just so toned into being like a defensive freak that maybe that kind of falls to the wayside a little bit in terms of what they ask him to develop and ask him to work on. But I am intrigued to see where it goes from here.
It is also just very, very hard to...
I'll get my ticket. Don't worry.
Okay. I
thought you were saying I'm going too long here. I was like, oh no, Chris is going to make me self-conscious. So.
No. What I'm saying, I think, is I did send you something. Shouts to Northman. But what I do just sort of think, is there's probably something to be learned from it. But I'm like, I like almost want to weight it more in that specific context. But I also am just like,
you got to give the benefit of the doubt, too, because he's only 20. He's in his early 20s. He's not a finished product yet.
I also stress so much in the long, I didn't think this when I first started watching the NBA in detail and covering it. It is so hard to do development in season. It is so freaking hard to do some of this stuff in season.
And I think the fact that you're seeing other players like Garland like make like these nuclear leaps,
that tells you that those guys are just are special. Like the, when the guys do that in season like mm-hmm. that, they are special.
They are special guys. But at the same time, like, that isn't the norm either. That's the other thing. Like, correct. It's not the norm for like Isaac Okoro to make like exponential jumps at like every third point in the season.
Yes. And on that note, it's like what work is done in the summer, what work is done like with the trainers they work with the situations they like, that all really matters. And it's like why like summer league for Okoro like probably could have been a good experience before his rookie year, and then the pandemic has happened, and like there is probably a thing to be written. And I don't know how to like do this broadly without like, because everyone's experiences have been different obviously in with this stuff, but like there has been some disruption with how the last couple years has gone, and like I don't think we fully understand the impact of, we don't understand the impact of the last couple years in a lot of ways yet, and we don't understand it I think in this specific context yet. There's an excuse like what these guys are, it doesn't mean we absolutely should like absolve them for what they are or not as players, but like There's part of that I think in here that I think is worth kind of keeping in the back of your mind. Okay, after the break, let's go to Karis LeVert. But first, I'm going to tell everyone about a new sponsor on the show, and that is Shady Rays. Shady Rays is an independent sunglasses company that gives you the features of $200 sunglasses for a fraction of the price. That means polarized lenses, well-constructed durable frames, and premium high-end finishes. Also, it's something you won't find anywhere else, is the Shady Rays Insane Protection Program. Shady Rays includes lost and broken protection on every pair. That means they will send you a brand new pair if you lose them, no matter what happened. Give them a try, and if you don't love them, you'll pay nothing. It's as simple as that. Plus, 10 meals, that's right, 10 meals are donated to fight hunger in America when you shop with Shady Rays, exclusively for Locked On Cavs listeners.
I'm just learning this right now. I'm buying a pair just because of that.
Yeah, apparently David Locke says they're great, so buy them. Head to ShadyRays.com, use the code LOCKEDON to get 50% off two or more pairs of polarized sunglasses. That's right, 50% off two more pairs of polarized sunglasses with the code Locked On for their best deal of the season. That's 50% off two or more pairs of Shady Rays sunglasses, backed by over 150,000 five-star reviews. All right, we're back here on Locked On Cavs. I'm Chris Manning.
Hey, that is question. Evan Jamal.
Yeah.
Would you do brown frames or black frames?
I mean, I'm a black and gray toned.
So am I, but I have a pair of brown sunglasses already. Maybe I'll do black. Black on black or black. Yeah, black on black. Go ahead. What's your question? I'm ordering a pair of Shady Rays, folks. I'm actually committed. I'm food scarcity is something I'm very passionate about. Just going to pull back the curtain on Evan. It's a serious issue in the United States. And yeah, no, I fuck with them donating meals with every sunglasses purchase. You should buy a pair if you can afford them. $55 ain't bad for like right. Ray-Ban quality sunglasses.
Yeah. All right, let's go to Karis LeVert. Evan, since he's come back from injury on March 14th, his own injury, that obviously is a little bit after Jared Allen went out with injury, so there's these two guys that play together in Brooklyn have not really had that chance to overlap in a Cavs uniform. In those 13 games since he's come back, 14.1 points per game, 45.2% from the field, 36.2% from three, as averaging 3.8 assists versus 1.9 turnovers in 29.3 minutes per game. I think what we have seen is that his role is sort of historically smaller for him than it has been for him in Indiana and Brooklyn before that. His usage is still pretty high for his position, but it is still like a smaller, more contained role than we've kind of seen from him going forward. So, Evan, what have you made of one Karis LeVert?
It's been a bit of a mixed bag. I think when it really put it in perspective the other day when he had media availability after practice, and it was like one of the first times he had practiced in a while for the Cavs. And I asked him, like, what are you doing to stay prepared, XYZ, just general questions. And he's like, guys, I'll be frank, I missed a month. And it really put it in perspective when he just like quantified it like just in that simple of a term. I'm like, oh shit, I guess he really did miss a month of action. So it's been tough. I think him having to acclimate and get to know his new teammates on the fly has already been a tough ass to begin with. I think losing Jared Allen, like you said, not really reestablishing that rapport they had in Brooklyn together has been disappointing for him, to say the least. I think not having Evan Mobley out there is tough. You see the idea at times, like when he had that career high, when he started next to Darius Garland, and when they played Dallas, you get the idea of what they're trying to do with him, and maybe that's like the apex of what he could be and what he can be. He's just a bit of a mixed bag. I think you are getting not necessarily buyer's remorse because, again, it's a draft pick. You don't know what it's going to end up being. Like, the Cavs could end up getting it back at this rate too, but I wouldn't be...
Ready for draft prep, Evan? You ready for some draft prep?
No. I wouldn't be rushing to sign into an extension right now. I would let this play out. If you don't trade him this offseason, use him as a trade chip because he is a nice expiring. He's making like roughly $18 million off the top of my head right now. Like, you can use that as a trade chip, which works. And Caris LeVert is a wing that plays defense, that provides playmaking, and can shoot and slash. Like, in theory, like, that's a player that you can make work if there's something out there that you can kind of upgrade with. But maybe we give him the benefit of the doubt because he's been injured. He hasn't had time to acclimate. It's been a suboptimal return so far on the trade, but let him get fully healthy this offseason. Let him come into training camp next year, and you kind of see where you're at there. And then maybe at the deadline, if it's still not working, you trade him then. But hot or cold, I'm lukewarm on him right now just because we haven't seen enough of him. Like, at times, yeah, I get it. At times, I'm like, oh my God, it's like watching Jordan Clarkson play with no fear out there. But it's tough. It's tough to fully gauge what you have with him.
Yeah, he has left me, I think, a little more cold than he has intrigued. I think some of the stuff of late has been better. Like, some of the three-point shooting, I think, has been kind of like a nice little surprise in moments when he's hit some threes you needed to. I think his chemistry with Darius Garland, as they've had more time on the court together, has gotten better as well. You know, it still feels like him and Kevin Love, two guys that I think are, you sort of want to work together, need to be figured out to some degree. I think what we're looking at is a guy that it just doesn't feel like this year is ever going to be the fully realized version of him. And then how that informs your roster building in the summer, I think, is an open question. I think will be a very interesting question. And I don't, you know, how Kobe Altman, how Mike Gainsey, how the coaching staff and their input plays into that will be really telling. I mean, we just, as we're looking at it right now, we just don't know. Like, it is impossible to know, like, how they really feel about it, like, and I think given some distance, I think giving the injury concerns and all of that, which were a thing before he even got hurt, I think it's not like the worst case scenario, because like the worst case scenario would have been he has like a very serious injury and then misses a bunch of time.
Yeah, but a guy who has an injury history with his feet really gives you pause, but thankfully,
yeah,
wasn't like the whole season, but it was for a while.
Right, and again, I think you've seen some of the benefit of late. It just is injury, and it's just telling that it's like it almost feels like because the Cavs are running so much through Darius right now and leaning on him so heavily in what they're doing and how Caris is trying to like figure out his place in all of it. It feels as if those two things are kind of making his role a little bit like tighter, let's say, than it might have been in the past for him. So I'm going to say I'm a little more cold. You're lukewarm, and we'll see where this goes. I mean, he will be a key piece for the team in these last two games. If they're going to, you know, get a top 7 or 8 seed, you know, host a play-in game, if they're the 7th seed, maybe get to the playoffs and you know, go through that. I think seeing him in that context, like, would be a real, like, I think, frankly, like, seeing him, how he does in a series against a team like Boston would be really, really interesting to see how that all kind of played itself out. But after the break, Evan, we're going to do one last player. That's going to be Lamar Stevens. But first, I'm going to tell everyone about Built Bar. Look, it's the time of year when people have already given up on their New Year's resolutions, but not this year. Stick to them this year with Built Bar. It's almost not really a resolution because you're going to enjoy eating them. Built Bars are covered in 100% real chocolate, yes, including the puffs. And if you go to Built.com, scroll down to the macros chart, you're going to be blown away. They're high protein, low calorie, high fiber, low carbohydrate. Go to Built.com and check out all these great flavors. There's white chocolate cookies and cream that they had. They have mint brownie, coconut almond, and a ton more. Most Built Bars contain 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, and 17 grams of protein. Compare that to a candy bar, which usually has about 240 calories, 30 grams of sugar, and dozens of net carbs. All their flavors are delicious, and there's new ones coming out all the time. They're all about taste. They make it delicious first, and then figure out how to make it healthy later. I don't know how they do it, but they do it literally every single time. Go to Built.com, use the promo code LOCKED15, and get 15% off your order. Again, the promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, wrapping up here on the one Lamar Stevens. I'm Chris Manning. That is Evan Damerill. Evan, for the year, Lamar Stevens. I think his an interesting conversation to have. I think in parallel and in contrast, if we have like a sandwich on today's episode, Okoro was the top slice of bread. LeVert is kind of the meat of that sandwich. Stevens is the bottom slice of bread. He's kind of a similar player in a lot of ways to what they're asking of. I mean, look, if we had more segments, there'd be some condiments on there, you know, some cheese, some lettuce. But like, this is like a peanut butter sandwich. It's like LeVert's the peanut butter, and you got two pieces of bread.
I can mess the good old fashioned PB&J. That's a.
Well, this is even. I mean, look,
strawberry or grape jelly, Chris.
I grew up a grape guy, but I think I'm like a raspberry guy now.
Ooh, that's funky. I like that. We grew up strawberry in my house, but I tried this blueberry jelly jam the other day that had like lemon in it as well. Ooh, it was good on my toast, but
creamy or crunchy peanut butter?
Crunchy.
Yeah, that's the wrong. I understand it.
I lay it on thick too. Like it's like that much peanut butter on my sandwich. There's an art to making a PB&J, and I will tell you if you're wrong if you share with me on Twitter or in the comments how you make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I will log into my personal account and tell you you're wrong if you tell me how you make it. And okay. I disagree. But Lamar Stevens, are you hot or cold?
Let's run through the numbers on this. 30% for the year from three, 29% at corner three. Since March 8th, that same benchmark as Okoro. He's also had a bump. He's shooting 38% from three since then, 40% from the corners. And he's also taking fewer three-pointers over that same stretch. That's weird to me that they've had that. Like, Okoro's high has obviously been higher, but they've both had this, like, we're shooting better, but we're shooting less from three as things have kind of broken down within the Jared Allen. There's that big Jared Allen screen-setting hole kind of in the middle of the Cavs roster.
Yeah, it is a bit of a hole in the roster, but yeah, Lamar.
And then obviously Evan Mobley joining that as
well. Lamar, well, Evan Mobley's not much of a screen setter, but Lamar Stevens is an interesting player because I don't think we'd be having this conversation if it just wasn't for the Cavs. The fact that the Cavs dealt with injuries and COVID quite a bit in the middle of the season where they just asked him, like, hey, Lamar, we need you to go out there and play 25, 30 minutes. And he seems to always be ready, and he seems to always be equipped for not too afraid of the moment. And I enjoy him as a player. I personally like what he's about as a person, and I also just think he is an interesting case study of the Cavs kind of finding good undrafted talent, developing them properly within their ecosystem. Granted, Stevens never played a single game for the Charge, never spent time with them, but either way, he's a good feather in their cap of using the two-way program properly, him and Dean Wade both. But Stevens, to me, if, again, like we're talking about Isaac Okoro and his shot selection and maybe not like column A and column B, Stevens is a lot like Moses Brown in the regard that he wouldn't be playing if this Cavs team is fully healthy, and we probably wouldn't be having this conversation if this Cavs team is fully healthy. But I'm warm on him. Like, if he was your back end ninth, tenth man in the rotation, you asked him to play 10, 15 minutes a night at the three or four defending point of attack players off the bench and maybe assisting Colin Sexton and Caris LeVert and kind of letting them take time off on defense as well. Like, I don't think that's a huge loss for the Cavs. And also, just from a cultural aspect at least, like, he's been a big proponent of, like, the junkyards dog stuff and the barking and, like, just kind of like this grit and grind mentality the Cavs really embraced. Like, he's been a big proponent of that.
Did he get a commission when they sold the sponsorship to the chain? Probably not, but he should.
You know, I'm no I don't work for the team, but I think it's easy money for the Cavs. They sold replicas of that chain in the team shop. So many people would buy that thing so quickly if they sold it like through Jared's website. Just easy money.
Absolutely,
baby.
Also going to be an NFT job for them. I'm sure.
For sure, probably the last game. But I'm warm on Stevens. I think just from a culture
that should actually be like the giveaway for the last game. It's too soon to produce those, but that should be the free item you get when you show up for the last game. Like, the first game of next year should be like the chain, just as like a throwback. Anyway, continue on Lamar Stevens. Let's stop talking about things.
Yeah, let's just stop about things that stop talking about the glories of capitalism, comrade. But just from a cultural aspect, he's a big proponent of that. So I don't see why you don't bring him back next year, because I wonder just him kind of being a guy that's like the connective tissue for both the veterans and the coaching staff and the young players and just everybody in between. Like, Lamar Stevens kind of just seems to be that guy where he's friends with everybody. And that's really beneficial and conducive to healthy growth long term.
I tend to think more than like Moses Brown that this is like an actual guy who could play in the NBA rotation.
Yeah.
Like, I think there's obviously limits. I think.
Oh, I guarantee you teams will be calling the Cavs this summer asking if he's available. Just like, hey, he's a body we could throw at LeBron or Kevin Durant because he can play physical defense without fouling.
Yeah, and I think, you know, playing him and Okoro as like a wing duo as you kind of go forward with them is a little tricky. I don't totally buy that as like a wing pairing you can kind of roll with going forward. What I do think is that I think Okoro, I think you're hoping that this is a sign of the 3-point shot is better than it's been. It's one of the things with that really helped Stevens back coming in the draft process is that he wasn't a shooter. He has NBA frame. He has, you know, a little bit of ability to he's a better, I think, cutter right now than Okoro is. He has a little bit of ability to put the ball in his hands and dunk and create some shots. Like, there's been times where like he's had to do that too much because everything around him is in the team right now is just a little bit off. But like, this is a guy that I think in terms of like, look, I understand that people want to like that he's not a perfect player, but I think this is where I tend to fall on guys like Steven. I think this applies to Dean Wade in a lot of ways too. If you can find a guy that was undrafted, they bring in on a two-way that you get to like on a pretty affordable contract and you can keep developing them, that's like a win for your organization. That is a win for you to find a guy like that who's better than the other options you would have had. I think I'm curious to see like, you know, how much I think Okoro definitely has like more development room than Stevens. I think that's pretty clear. What I do think is that, and I think Okoro is better than Stevens, but what I also would say is I think Stevens kind of clearly knows what his role is, and he's like also pretty confident when you ask him to shoot the corner three. Like, yeah, he looks like a guy that is like not gonna hesitate. He's not, when he gets it open, he's gonna let it fly, and I think that's like a good indication. If it is hard for me to suss out like how real some of this is because the shooting percentage increase has happened at the same time as they're taking less threes. But it's interesting that he is at least like making the ones that are coming his way right now, and it's like not covering up all the wounds, but it's like at least the Cavs are getting some band-aids on what has gone wrong the last couple weeks.
No, I absolutely agree. It's again, I don't think he'd be playing much or if at all if the Cavs were fully healthy, but I think this is one of the bigger wins from this season is for Dean Wade as well, where like you said, you bring these guys in on cheap two-way contracts, you develop them in house, you kind of grow them, you hope they become rotation caliber players. That's what Brendan Yu, with the Cleveland Charge, has shared with me through conversations. That's like their biggest goal is just developing rotation caliber players. And like you said, Stevens has all the proponents and abilities, and both skill-wise and God-given abilities of being a basketball player. And like at the NBA level, and he's a win for the Cavs. It's interesting how they're going to deploy him going forward, just when this team is healthy, not just this season. I'm just thinking long term at this point. I just wouldn't be opposed or upset if Lamar Stevens carves out minutes as like the eighth or ninth man in this rotation next season. Like, that's fine by me. And as a quick pivot,
it would be,
do you
it would what go I, ahead. I think it would just he would be if you could find. If the best, he is a more tenable guy if a couple things improve around the organization. So like, if you can improve on the Jetty Osman minutes and find a more consistent spacer, if Evan Mobley develops a 3-point shot to some degree, if Colin Sexton and comeback addiction provide more spacing, like, there are outcomes of where this roster could shift that like make a guy like Stevens finding his niche a little bit easier to do. And it applies to Okoro too. If the roster can find some, be stretched out with 3-point shooting elsewhere, it kind of makes playing these guys, I think, a little bit easier at times.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And what I'm thinking about now is, do you see RJ Nembhard being like their new pet project to kind of develop like Stevens? He's not like a slur player, but like in terms of the fact that he's like a big NBA body or a wing caliber NBA body that can't shoot, do you see him being the next pet project for the Cavs like that?
I would be trying. I think like that's the template of a guy that I understand of, you know, why those guys go undrafted. I think it's interesting that he's on an actual contract.
And that's because I keep getting asked that question. Is like, why him over Brandon Goodwin? I'm like, it's because the Cavs see a lot of upside in this guy. Like, I think they see something that maybe Brandon Goodwin doesn't provide, who is a
smaller Goodwin, scoring guard who... Well, and it's like Goodwin is also on a two-way now, so like if you want to like retain him, like you have the inside track of of kind of doing that.
I just think like, it's more so people are like, well, what about the playoffs? I'm like, bro, you're not playing Brandon Goodwin or Arjun Imhart come playoff time. Rondo phased Goodwin out of the rotation entirely.
Yeah, I mean, I think the interesting thing about Goodwin is that the contract is not. You will have to make a move to re-sign him, I believe, in the summer. If I'm correct, if I'm wrong, but I believe they would have to give him a qualifying offer because he'll be an RFA. They didn't like give him the Kobe Altman special of a multi-year deal, if I'm not mistaken.
Are you talking about Nembhard or Goodwin?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Oh. Sorry, I meant Nembhard. So he basically got converted to a partially guaranteed minimum contract. He'll have a qualifying offer for the summer, and they can match any offers that comes where. Or what I would guess they may try to do is try to sign him to the Kobe Altman multi-year with a non-guaranteed special.
Yeah, I think he's gonna. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. According to Basketball Reference, he's making $58,493 for the rest of the season. From when he signed that contract, he's a UFA next year. But I think the Cavs will just try and sign him as quickly as possible.
Yeah, so he'll be an RFA in the summer, and then if they consider him a qualifying, they can match anything comes his way, and then I think more than likely maybe try to bring him back on like a multi-year, very team friendly.
Guess
contract.
What this year is? The last year, J.R. Smith's money's on the books.
If I could, I would do the J.R. Smith in the Garden celebration.
Yeah, Isaiah Hartenstein's money, his player option is on the books this year too. Weird.
Isaiah Hartenstein, been very good for the
Cavs. I'm telling y'all, I see when I look at a player, I know when I see an interesting player. He's weird.
Yeah, you also try to.
But Hartenstein's is fun.
To Jokic.
No.
You try to compare him to Jokic.
I'm saying it in jest, but he is a diet zero calorie. Jokic, like, he does some funky stuff. Hartenstein's is fun. It's still wild to me that he's black, because he definitely doesn't look like it when you look at him, but that's what it is. He's white as fresh fallen snow.
Okay, on that note,
that's just always my fun Thursday's fact episode. Like, oh, Isaiah Hartenstein is
it's like the Mike McDaniel thing. Okay,
yeah,
Thursday, Danny Cunningham, late Thursday evening. Danny Cunningham recording Thursday after the traditional workday. Danny will be with me talking about Cavs Nets and some other stuff. And then Evan and I will be back on Friday after Cavs Nets. We are going to recap that game because it means a lot. So part of the reason our schedule is a little wonky this week is you accommodate us recapping that game and giving you a breakdown of it for your Saturday podcast needs. Because frankly, that's the most important thing. The games matter. It's a game at stake, so we should talk about it instead of dwelling in some other stuff and trying to wait till Monday.
Shouldn't
to
be
recap
hot or cold
that
going into Friday. Saturday, though, we'll be talking about some interesting hoops.
And then we get Sunday, Cavs Bucks, 3:30 p.m. Should be a dandy old time. Until next time, I'm Chris. That's Evan. Be well. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you. I will at least talk to you again later on. Peace.